Well, Nick, I think that was the most spring training result we've gotten since the beginning of Grapefruit League play a week ago. Not a lot of action, not a lot of big names, and the ones that did play were largely quiet. But again, I guess that's part of what we sign up for when we watch spring training. A 1-1 tie between the Jays and the Braves. I thought for a second when Ben was doing the final call there, I thought for a second maybe like John Schneider and Snitker, they would kind of look out and they'd say, yeah, let's keep playing. But I guess they decided not to push it today, a 1-1 tie for us to digest today.
Yeah, I think after those 9 innings, I'm not sure if your appetite for more innings would be particularly high. You know, one of the benefits of working in this industry is sometimes you're kind of involved in an event that's so electric that you feel like it's just a privilege to be a part of it in your own small way. It's pretty safe to say we did not enjoy that benefit today. But you know what? There was some positives for the Blue Jays too, right? Like they had a couple pitchers who figured to have roles at the MLB level at some point this season. You know, Brendan Little, you know, gave you a scoreless inning. Zach Pop gave you a scoreless inning. And then some of the role player types, you know, Davis Schneider had a couple of hits. Ernie Clement got a hit, played some shortstop, showing that he can kind of still do that. It's not just third base in terms of his positional versatility. Yeah, this is small potato stuff, but it does matter at a certain level. And today was a day for the role players.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening, of course, to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Shoot us a text if you like, 590-590. Name and location. The people's text line is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Yeah, I'm not sure how much time we're going to spend on today's game specifically because, yeah, not a lot happened if we're being completely honest, but I did want to spend some time talking with you about what we saw over the course of the week, just because, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk a lot of Blue Jays baseball since essentially the spring campaign began. But let's start with today's game. A 1-1 tie, and to your point, I mean, it was a bullpen day, so we got to see, let's see, 8 pitchers on the Blue Jays side: Barnes, Little, Pop, Walker, Gowdy, Lovelady, Fluharty, and Gregory, who came in for one out at the end of the game. One final pitching change in the bottom of the 9th inning. But you're right. I mean, Brendan Little, I tend to think one inning from him, 2 hits, no runs, no walks, no strikeouts. He faced 4 batters. I got to think with Little, he's, I don't know if a lock is quite the term to describe anyone who is not, let's say, Jimmy Garcia, Jeff Hoffman, I guess, Sandlin and Swanson, probably. Like, those are probably, that's probably it, I would suppose. But he's like in that next tier of guys. You know, I'm fond of saying the circle of trust. Now, again, the circle of trust in spring training is like, you know, who knows who's involved in that. But I got to think Brendan Little, due to the nature of his game, will be a part of the bullpen. I just don't know how trusted a member of the bullpen he will be.
Well, he kind of might have to be trusted in the sense that he's really the predominant lefty at the moment. You know, you might see a move at some point later in spring training. I know that they brought Ryan Yarbrough aboard, but he's more of a bulk reliever as opposed to a situational guy.
Right.
And I think Brendan Little is a pretty interesting player. I know that, you know, he's a little bit of a late bloomer, but he's a former first round pick. And last year, you know, he gave them 45 innings at 3.74 ERA. That's kind of fine for a reliever. But the thing that really stood out is that he gets people to put the ball on the ground. So last year in Major League Baseball, there were 402 pitchers that threw at least 40 innings. He had the number one ground ball rate of all those pitchers. He was the only one who had over 70% ground balls. That is a really handy thing to have in your back pocket in certain situations.
Sure.
And it's interesting that the Blue Jays had Tim Mazes, basically with a very similar skill set for a number of years there. Little's more sinker curveball as opposed to sinker slider. But again, the lefty who is there for certain situations, certain hitters, and is really good at getting ground balls. I'm not saying that Little's going to be as good as Meza was at his best, because Meza was fantastic in a couple of years with the Blue Jays. But he's got a nifty skill set, and I think it's important to a bullpen that just doesn't really have much coming from the left side.
It's interesting because when you, I would recommend people to go read this article if you're a fan of this kind of stuff. Not everyone is, but I do like these kinds of discussions. Arden has a great piece up. Arden Zwelling, of course, for sportsnet.ca, has a piece up on the website from a couple of weeks ago. It's not a new piece, from a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, about Nick Sandlin, you know, Nick Sandlin's usage towards lefties. Now, we haven't seen a lot of Nick Sandlin this season or this spring training, and he didn't pitch today, so we don't have to talk about him too much. But a big crux of Arden's like thesis in that article was that Nick Sandlin can use a splitter and pitch two lefties, right? Same goes for Eric Swanson, I would imagine, as well. So I wonder if the need for an actual lefty is as high as it was in the past. I mean, obviously, you can't get away with having, like, no left-handed pitching. You have to have at least a little bit of it. But I wonder how much that's in the back of the minds of people like Ross Atkins as they construct the bullpen from, you know, with a lot of right-handed pitching in there already. And to your point, Brandon Little is going to be in there. And we can talk about Zach Pop in a sec, obviously not a lefty, but we can talk about him shortly. But just in a general sense, I wonder if the presence of Swanson and Sandlin, you know, in the Trevor Richards-ish roles are going to be a factor here at all.
Yeah, Trevor Richards is exactly the name I was about to mention. As a guy who was a right-handed pitcher, but when you're a right-handed pitcher and your best secondary pitch is a changeup or a splitter as opposed to a slider or a curveball, that makes a significant difference. And normally it makes you much better against left-handed hitters because your secondary pitch, instead of coming into them, is sort of trailing away from them. And guys with splitters like that, you know, like we've seen Eric Swanson have success in that role, not necessarily in that role, but with lefties in the past, and Nick Sandlin as well. Again, you know, as you mentioned, show you still want to have a lefty there. There are certain hitters that just really struggle seeing the ball coming out of that angle, and you want to have that available to you. But the Blue Jays might not be as vulnerable due to a lack of lefties as some other teams would be with just having a Little and maybe a Yarbrough in there as well, because of the presence of these guys that have these off-speed pitches that work really well against left-handed bats.
So let's talk a little about Zach Pop as well, because he was the other name in here that is perhaps Jacob Barnes, I suppose, is a possibility as well. But I think Pop is a guy we've spoken about a lot in the past. No small reason, also because he's Canadian, certainly from Brampton. But, you know, he is a righty, so we're not talking about him in the same length or same part of the conversation we just had about Little and other lefties in the bullpen. But, you know, with Pop, it's never really been about his stuff in very small sample sizes. It's been about the stuff over larger sample sizes, right? And Ben said it during the game, but it's always been about his consistency, or, you know, maybe more specifically the lack thereof when it comes to consistency. So I don't know. Like, are you bullish on Pop's potential to pitch consistently at the major league level this year? I go back and forth, I suppose, but it just, and again, the bullpen is not set in stone. So that could, I suppose, be a role for him come the beginning of the season. And again, like, today is not going to be the final word on that for Pop either way. Right. But it does feel like it's a bit of an uphill battle for him to climb as we approach, you know, it's March now, but it's going to be regular season baseball later this month, which is exciting. But between now and the end of March, it does feel like a lot would have to go right for Pop if he's going to be in the bullpen.
Certainly. He's someone who I thought might be vulnerable to being non-tendered during the offseason, right, to be honest. Like, he's coming off a year where he put up a 5.59 ERA. And, you know, some of his underlying stuff's a little bit better, but he doesn't really strike guys out, and that's a big hurdle. When you don't really rack up strikeouts, that's going to be a big hurdle. It means you have to minimize walks. You have to do a lot of other things well. Now, he's got the good velocity on his sinker, the good movement. He can get ground balls, not as much as Brendan Little, for instance, but he can be a guy who's above 50% on ground ball rate, and that's a helpful thing to have. And there's certain hitters who are definitely vulnerable to that type of pitching, but yeah, I couldn't describe myself as very bullish on Pop. Like, the last time we saw him as an effective pitcher at the major league level was 2022. And, you know, it's not impossible for a guy to have a couple of years that aren't particularly strong and then come back and produce at the big league level. You know, especially relievers are volatile. We know this. But at the same time, yeah, he's a bit fringy for me right now. I think he might be a bit of a quad A up and down guy, as opposed to someone who you're kind of counting on over a significant stretch of time.
Yeah, a depth guy, probably, right? More than anything else. I mean, they're going to be injuries to the bullpen. That's just how it is over the course of a long season. And if that is the case, then I got to imagine Pop will almost always be one of the first candidates to get bounced up to the majors. But you're right, I'm not sure the staying power is going to be there. But again, I'm open to being wrong about that. But again, we have to see a pretty large jump for him between now and the beginning of the regular season, at least. From an offensive standpoint, both the Jays and the Braves in this game had five hits, which just seems fitting. It was both teams had one run, both teams had five hits, and this game was a 1-1 tie. But from an offensive standpoint, it's kind of funny because I feel like if you were listening to Braves talk, I'm not sure how much angst is going to be in after a spring training game, but you feel like you'd be much more disappointed in the Braves for only putting up one run when this is a game that started with Profar, Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Marcelo Zuna, Harris, Ozzie Albies, or even Orlando Arcia played in this game, and he's like not a slouch either, even if he is lower on the totem pole than all of those guys, and they only scored one run. So again, good for the Blue Jays pitching staff, I suppose, from a bullpen perspective. But the offensive result here, you know, you kind of wanted more than the one run, but five hits were accounted for by, let's see, Ernie Clement. David Schneider had two hits. Clement had the one. Stefanik had one hit. And Straw had one hit as well. So that's essentially, those are your five hits from those players. I'm not sure there's a lot to be taken away there, but I do find it interesting that three of the five hits were gotten by Schneider and Ernie Clement, two guys to figure to be locks to at least starting the year up with the team. And Ernie Clement, at the very least right now, barring something really crazy happening, is your starting third baseman come opening day.
That's certainly the way it looks. And with David Schneider too, like he had such a bad run to the end of last season that anything he does that is sort of remotely positive has to be of interest to the Blue Jays. Like he had a 469 OPS in the second half of last season. He hit 140.
Yeah.
Like that is, you know, he was unplayable realistically. Like the only reason he was getting trotted out was because they're still trying to evaluate him and it didn't really matter if the team won or lost. That's not how they feel about 2025. Like if he is playing anything like that, even in a reserve role, and right now his role would sort of project to be a guy who steps in against left-handed pitching, probably in left field or potentially DH. And there's pressure on him to produce at this point. Like he had his incredible run when he came up as a rookie, but that goodwill has been extinguished at this point, you know, just because he had such a tough 2024. So it's all about what he does now. We have to remember with him too, that he was never a huge prospect, right? Like he's someone who earned his way up and he deserves credit for that too. But sometimes when you have that prospect pedigree, you're a former first round pick, you've showed up on prospect lists in the past,
right?
People will be patient with you. And I don't think that Schneider's going to get that patience from the organization if he doesn't produce. And so he's always someone to be looking at closely during spring training because he does have a lot to prove. And with him, you know, the biggest thing, you know, there's two things. One is he hitting for power at all? Because that's his calling card. Like realistically, he's not going to be very effective unless he's hitting for power. And the second thing is he avoiding strikeouts? Because, you know, I don't think there's a version of David Schneider that has, say, a below average strikeout rate. It's just the game he plays. It's just part of what he does. But it has to be within reason,
right,
for him to be effective. So, you know, in this game, again, it was singles. You know, one of them was nearly a double, but he was thrown out on a good play by Profar. But that's what I'm watching carefully with Schneider. It's like, are the strikeouts up and is there some level of power and does the balance between those two things make sense? And, you know, I don't think there's any reason to give up on the player. He's talented. He's shown, again, like I mentioned, when he came up as a rookie, it's pretty unbelievable what he was able to accomplish. He has done well at the minor league level. There's a reason his projections are still, you know, kind of average-ish MLB hitter. There's probably still something there, but, you know, his floor is so low and we have seen how low it is in the very recent past. So he's definitely a fascinating figure for the Blue Jays in this spring training season.
When he had the hit, it was a pretty, and we were watching on the feed in here in baseball control. So he had the hit and I heard it on the radio first because we were a little delayed with the feed watching on MLB.TV. And it was interesting because it was a pretty good hit, all things considered. And then I saw him around the base, and then the camera cut to Profar picking up the ball in one hop. And I thought, he is not that fast. Like very few players
absolutely
are,
not.
Honestly. But Javis Schneider was not fast enough to beat it out. He actually almost did. He made it close, but yeah, that was probably the wrong decision. But still, two hits from Davis Schneider, one from Ernie Clement. And that's what we got in today's ball game. That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Shoai Lee. Let's take a quick break here, Nick. And on the other side, let's talk about some of the observations from earlier in the week. Because, again, not a lot from this 1-1 tie. But I did want to get to some things we saw, again, on Tuesday, on Wednesday, even from yesterday, Friday, when we got to see players like Scherzer and Francis and Berríos and Bassett and Hoffman, different guys like that. So we'll boogie through some of those topics before we say goodbye. So that's on the other side. Again, that's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Shoai Lee. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Joe and Nick here with you for another couple minutes. Still some time if you like. Text us, 590-590, name and location. full disclosure, there haven't been a lot of texts, Nick. I think I'm not super surprised, I'll be completely honest, after a 1-1 tie. But hey, that's where we are in spring training. It's still early in the spring. As we get later on in the spring campaign, I'm sure those will pick up. But we'll do Jay's Talk again tomorrow. So you'll have your chance if you miss us today. I said before the break, I did want to get to some of the topics we had not gotten to because, you know, this is our first Jay's Talk of this spring campaign as well. So I wanted to get to some of the topics from earlier in the week. So I'll give you the choice. Since we only have a couple minutes left here, Nick, you can pick. Would you like to chat about Scherzer, Francis, Berríos? We got Bassett from yesterday. We can talk some Vladdy, who went yard with an absolute no-doubter. Varsho as well, who made his spring debut at DH and also hit a home run in his first AB of the spring. Jeff Hoffman made his spring debut yesterday. We can talk about anything you like in the last 9 minutes here. What do you think?
I think Scherzer is the way to go, not just because he's the new guy in town, but you know, also the future Hall of Famer, a guy that you saw his teammates were excited to watch him pitch. I think that was arguably as fun to see as his outing itself.
I think he is pitching tomorrow, I think. Tomorrow or Monday.
That sounds about right, based on how much rest he'd be looking at. But, you know, he was very effective. There's no two ways about that. You know, he got a lot of missed a lot of bats, which is always what you want to see from these guys. His opponents had 16 swings and they had 8 whiffs on those swings. And it was on basically everything he was throwing was generating whiffs. And that's really encouraging because he's a guy whose strikeout rate really fell off last season. And a big part of the story of Max Scherzer's 2024 is that, like, not only was he injured, but when he was healthy, while he was still broadly effective, like he did okay, you know, he wasn't the guy he had been even the previous year. Like, we're not talking like, oh no, Max Scherzer at age 39, 40 wasn't who he was when he was 28. Like, right. He wasn't the guy he had been in 2023. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with the fact he lost about a tick of velocity. And so that's something I was interested in going into this game is like, what's his velocity going to look like? And so in that outing, he was averaging 92.6 on his fastball, which is basically what he did last season. So that sounds like a nothing burger. But what's interesting to me is that generally speaking, guys build up over the course of spring. And so I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, especially veterans who are, you know, conserving energy and figuring things out, if we see that his velocity climbs a little bit as the spring season goes on, it gets closer to playing regular season ball. So I found that to be encouraging that he was able to match his 2024 just in that first outing at a time when often pitchers aren't quite at 100%. So again, we'll see how it transpires, but based on this, I wouldn't be surprised if we're kind of back into the 93s for the end of spring or the regular season. And that would probably make a pretty big difference in terms of his ability to be effective in 2025 and, yeah, get that strike up rate back again, not necessarily to prime Max Scherzer, but a little bit closer to what it's been in the past.
Yeah. When he was pitching on Tuesday, 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, which was earned, 4 strikeouts. But of course the run also came in a kind of a weird spot because the run scored, Joey Loperfido had the ball go off his glove and he had the neck injury. The runner got into third. It was also a very fast guy in Victor Scott. And then I think there was a sac fly that got him in from third a couple pitches later, essentially. So that's definitely, you know, doesn't tell the whole story just reading the box score. But also on the first strikeout in that game, which I believe was of Lars Nootbaar, he hit 94.2 miles an hour on the strikeout of Nootbaar in that it was like a 2-2 count in the top of the first inning. At 94.2 miles an hour, only 9 pitches he had thrown in 2024 were in the entirety of the year were harder than that strikeout of Nootbaar. So I think that's encouraging, right? I think that's encouraging. And to your point, Nick, I mean, in 2023, if you go back the year, that was the year he was started the year with the Mets and he was traded to the Rangers towards the end of the season. His last, you know, quote unquote, fully healthy season. He still threw at age 38, 39. He still threw 152 innings with 174 strikeouts. So, I mean, I think if you believe that Scherzer is anywhere close to being healthy, and he himself has said that spring training and the offseason isn't about getting back into rhythm. It's not really about velo. It's not really about any of those things. It's just about feeling yourself and feeling normal. He said he feels as normal as he's felt in a couple of years, which, again, can you predict a 3.77 ERA over 152 innings? Probably not, but I mean, if you get anywhere close to that at age 40, he's going to be 41 in July. I think he'd be very happy with that.
Absolutely. And I think there's been a little bit too much doom and gloom about his health prognosis going into the season. Like, I'm aware that last year did not go the way he would have hoped from that perspective. And, you know, he's past his 40th birthday. So those are two big negative things in his favor. But again, as you mentioned, the previous season, 152 innings. Before that, 145. Before that, 179.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about his age 36 to 38 seasons, right? Yeah. He has, even when he's been in the physical decline stage of his career, still able to give his team quality innings. And yeah, and you go back further than that, you're going to get the pandemic season and then a huge run of 200 inning seasons. Like, he has been extremely durable through much of his Hall of Fame career. And not all of that applies. Like, it doesn't really matter what he was like physically at 25 compared to 40. But again, we don't have to go too deep into the past to find a time when he was pretty consistent in that way. And I'm relatively bullish that he's going to be, yeah, a quality fourth starter for the team. And, you know, there's always a little bit of a chance of some magic, a little bit more upside with him than if you'd signed more of kind of a pure innings eating type to fill out that role.
Before we go, quickly, would you like to care to offer an opinion on the challenge system, the ABS challenge system, through a week of spring training? I've quite liked it, personally. I've liked how quick it is, but I mean, I don't think we saw any challenges today, I don't think. But again, it could be the ballpark, right?
Yeah,
it might be one of the ballparks that does not have the abilities. Dunedin, though, does have those abilities. So I'm curious what you've thought.
I think it's all about speed, right? Like, as soon as it starts to bog down the game, that's when people are going to get frustrated. There's already, with the pitch clock, been this huge stride forward in terms of picking up the pace of baseball, where its pace had been a problem in the past. So people do not want to take a step back on this.
No.
And it seems so far like it is quick. It is not disruptive to the flow of the game, and it can make a big difference. You know, we saw in that spring training game where a strikeout turned into a walk, turned into a big inning. Like, getting these calls right has pretty significant consequences. And yeah, I don't have any issue with taking what seems like, you know, 10 seconds to make that happen.
It doesn't seem like it's going to be in the majors. It's not going to be in the majors this year. We know that, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be there that soon. But again, I wouldn't be that surprised if Major League Baseball said, hey, you know what, in 2026, maybe we do have a ABS challenge system. Maybe not full on robo umps. You still have the human factor back there. But having the challenge system, I think, is pretty huge.
It seems like a good compromise sort of fully rolling out the robo ump plan, which I guess you still have to believe is eventually going to happen. And having the current system where you can have some really, really rough calls that make a big difference on the outcome of the game. Yeah, it's just a nice middle ground.
Nick, this was fun, man. The quick Jays Talk classic for us here on a Saturday, but I hope we get to do it again soon. I'm certain we will once the regular season gets started.
Absolutely. Looking forward to being back.
That is the great Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali, and appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, which, as always, is broadcast during spring training across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Before we go, this copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Nick Ashbourne, Ben Shulman, Jason Berenger, Tom Young, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We have another edition of Jays Talk on Sunday afternoon. That's tomorrow. Jesse Rumanoff will be in with me tomorrow. Jesse has been spending a lot of time in Florida. He told me he actually took a trip down there. So we'll get his Florida takes when he comes back with us on Jays Talk tomorrow. And then we're back again next weekend with some more Jays Talk, quote unquote, classic with Julia Kreutz. So should be a lot of fun as we continue spring training. A 1-1 tie for us today. Don't get to see that too often, but hope for some more exciting baseball tomorrow. Thanks for, again, being with us on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Had a great Saturday, everyone. We'll talk to you later.